The day is February 18th, 2016. It's Ray Lytle Show, and we are here. By we, I mean me. I'm Ray Lytle. It's so good to be here. And Tommy. Hello, Tommy.
I'm live from Sherman, Ray.
You are. You are in Sherman today. Listen, there's a lot of stuff. My God, we don't have a lot of time. And there's a lot of stuff going on to discuss. For those that don't know, the Ray Lytle Show, of course, ran for years on a talk radio in Springfield. It was deemed I need another word for too liberal, but it was deemed too something and isn't on the air anymore.
Not towing the line?
Maybe not agreeing with everyone else. I don't know what the reason is, but I know that we're here now and being on the internet and doing our own thing, we talk about whatever we want. And so we're going to start with Tommy. Here's what we got to start with. I mean, the big thing going on this week is it's got to be Supreme Court Justice Antonin Scalia.
Oh, my God, yes.
And the lunatics who think he was murdered. I mean, there's a lot of layers. There's a lot of layers to the whole Scalia thing. But somehow the conspiracy lunatics that are under the impression the man was murdered, they have jumped to the forefront of discussion. It really is amazing. So, Tommy, let me ask you. When you heard Antonin Scalia died, what was your first thought?
I wasn't all that surprised. I mean, sure, you're surprised because it's a Supreme Court justice, but just knowing Antonin Scalia and probably his lifestyle at 68 years old, I wasn't surprised that he passed away.
Oh, no. 79 years old, Tommy.
Oh, yeah. He's 79. Yeah. I must have read that.
Almost 80. Oh, well,
yes, and I am definitely not surprised that he would have passed away from natural causes.
And by the way,
at a hunting lodge.
Obese and hunting lodge, my ass. We'll get into that in a moment. But he was obese.
Yes.
And he had chronic health problems, all right? Chronic health problems. His son, by the way, his son has asked the people to stop with this conspiracy nonsense. He says it is, it's taking away, what was his, I'm going to paraphrase because I don't have the quote in front of me. But Antonin Scalia's son, so for those of you out there that actually believe this conspiracy nonsense, Antonin Scalia's son and family has asked people to please stop stealing the narrative away from what it should be, which is their father, whether you agree with him or not, was a Supreme Court justice who believed in the Constitution. Granted, it was his version of the Constitution, but he believed in it and he served his country. And they want you to remember that. They would rather you not
about his decisions.
Yeah, they would rather
he stuck by him 100%.
Yeah, even though I disagree with like all of his decisions, you know. And if you ever read any of his dissents, I've gotten a chance to read some over the last few days. Oh my God, what a great writer this guy was. I mean, I've never heard anyone describe hate the way he described it. It was, but seriously, he really was.
Or the unborn.
And by the way, he was, you know, he was a guy who, although his decisions were controversial, and we can say that. But you know, did you see like Ruth Bader Ginsburg, who is perhaps the most liberal member of the bench? Scalia was by far the most conservative member.
Conservative, by far.
But did you see how they were really, I mean, she seemed to be really broken up. She says he was my buddy. I mean, really, they got along very well.
You know, he's probably like one of those guys that, like, kind of like Bill Clinton in a sort of way where, yeah, you might not agree with his politics, but by God, he was probably really fun to go have a drink with.
Well, and listen, I have several of my friends, very close friends of mine, are right there. I mean, not quite Ted Cruz crazy, but they're right there. And
we get along great.
I mean, we get along great. We can agree to disagree on a lot of things, but we're still friends. So, I mean, it can happen. I know there, and it's a sad point in this country because there are so many people that are so just, my God, they're so set in their position of liberals are enemies or conservatives are enemies. It's really.
They're
we
so
live in a frightening time.
Point, they're almost dangerous.
Yes. And no matter what the issue is, they somehow turn it into a liberal versus conservative. Whoever it is I'm mad at, they're trying to take over the world, which is exactly what they did with Antonin Scalia, these conservative nut jobs.
Which is what the Drudge Report kind of people want
well,
them
yeah,
to
I mean, that, yeah, that
and
is,
believe.
That's Drudge and Breitbart. And, I mean, and anyone who believes, who follows blogs from conservative whack jobs living in their parents' basement. I'm saying
the Illinois Policy Institute.
And the Illinois Policy Institute, yes. Which basically is just a bunch of rich white guys putting money into an organization whose sole purpose is to lower their taxes and break unions because they realize unions make contributions to Democratic candidates, and Democratic candidates won't lower the taxes the way they want them to be lowered.
And we don't feed off the red meat that the base does. So.
Yeah.
Yes, they hate us.
And what they do is they pay money to try to convince a bunch of people who are being hurt by supporting them into supporting them. You know, remember, like, when a bunch of people who didn't have health care, they actually riled them up and had them protesting against Obamacare, which makes
because
no sense.
Because you're going to have to pay a penalty.
Yeah.
Which, you shouldn't have to pay a penalty for not yes. taking care of yourself.
Well, if these jackasses would just actually have gone to the exchanges and found out that they, you know, the problem with Obamacare isn't that the low class gets hurt, because the low class are doing fine. The problem with Obamacare is the savings didn't come to the middle class the way they were supposed to. But that's a whole...
It didn't go far enough.
That's... Yes. I agree that single payer would have been better, but that's me, because we all would have been on the same level playing field. However, that's another issue for another show. But these same people are the ones that somehow believe that Antonin Scalia was murdered and Obama murdered him.
Or, now that's not the only theory, Ray.
All right, what's the other
that
one?
That possibly the conservatives did it because he was becoming too liberal.
Oh, that's right. There's nothing about Antonin Scalia.
No, I read that.
That
Ray.
Was liberal.
Yes.
Do you know the best theory? The best theory I saw was the one that said, do we know Barack Obama's whereabouts on the night?
Well, don't you find it strange, Ray, that he knew 2 full hours before the media? He is the president, for God's sake.
Let's think about it. I mean, they're going so far as to think that the president of the United States got an Air Force One and flew down to Texas to this private ranch.
Correct?
To the private ranch, went in, put a pillow over the face of Antonin Scalia,
yes,
suffocated him, then snuck back out, got back in Air Force One, and flew back to Washington, D.C., where he was there to receive the phone call telling him that a Supreme Court justice had died.
Well, you know, Air Force One flies at 600 miles per hour, Ray. It's possible.
I'm telling you, it is. some of the people out there, what they believe is completely ridiculous. And I do mean ridiculous.
I think, Ray, that he got the idea from Ellen when he was out there.
Like Ellen told him.
Ellen told him. Ellen said, hey, you know what? You could get one more pick. Mm. You just got to take out Scalia.
Listen, there's a lot of troubling things about Scalia and what happened to him. None of them involve his death. Here's the thing with his death. Like I said, it's an almost 80-year-old man with chronic health conditions. Anybody who read what really happened, for starters, this is one of these big ranches, okay? And they have these gigantic ranches. People are under the impression that it's a ranch like one of the homes that are sitting off of the lake, you know, where, oh, it's about, I mean, it's a quarter of a mile down from the driveway. I mean, no.
It could be 5 miles.
No. This is a South Texas ranch. My brother-in-law happens to work at one of these South Texas ranches. These South Texas ranches go for hundreds of miles, okay?
Oh, yeah, there's thousands and thousands of acres.
It's 50 miles from public road to where this guy's ranch is. You know, I mean, it's a considerable amount of miles. That's how far in it is, okay? And they basically live there because they're rules free. They're even though they're part of a county and they pay taxes and blah, 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 it's real. It's a private drive. It's really not a county road. It's, you know, in order to get there, you have to get on their drive. It's not a public road. So there's
the media cannot get close enough.
No one can get close to the.
No,
I know. Like I said, my brother-in-law works at one of these ranches like this, and you go down there and you get off the regular county road, and then you just start driving on this private drive, and you go miles and miles and miles until you get to the private ranch. And when they're in there, they do whatever they want. That's what this whole thing's about. So. This guy named
Bookers.
This guy named John Poindexter owns this particular ranch. Poindexter is one of these billionaire guys who gives money to everybody. You know, he gives money to Democrats, the Republicans, you know, and he has these parties where he invites, he brings people in to this Shibolo Creek Ranch, all right, in South Texas. He brings them in, and they have these. All they say is events. Nobody's sure what goes on. But I can tell you from what I've heard.
Toga party?
What goes on is drinking, drugs, if you're into that kind of thing, prostitutes.
I knew there had to be hookers involved.
Yeah, I mean, there's just, I'm not saying that's what happened to Scalia, but that's the kind of thing that happens at these ranches, okay?
This is where the elite go to live out the powerful fantasy.
Yes.
Of it's good to be the king.
They can do whatever they want. You can do whatever you want at these places. And by the way, more power to you. If you can afford that, God bless you. More power to you. If that's something that you want, it's not. Listen, this is not anything I want to do. To me, a getaway is not that. You know, give me either a beach. Or, I don't know, maybe give me a city where I'm overlooking something, you know, from a high rise. I'd do that. Some people want to go to a ranch. They want to go hunting. They want to they want to have the hookers. You know, whatever it is, they get to do it. They do whatever they want. They can go hunt humans, for all I know, at these places. Wouldn't that be something if they were hunting humans? Oh, my God.
Well, it is awful close to the Mexican border.
Right. Maybe they're hunting Mexicans. For all we know. Maybe they are hunting. We don't know what it is. No, but anyway, so they go to this party. So this guy, John Poindexter, invites an almost 80-year-old man there who's obese. It's Valentine's weekend. All right? He leaves his wife at home, by the way. And he goes there with somebody else. They won't say who he went with. Did you notice that?
Yes.
Nobody has said who he was. So who knows who he was there with? But we know that Poindexter paid for him to be there. Now, this is where it gets interesting with Scalia. And not to tarnish the man, because we don't know if there was a quid pro quo, but we do know that there is a connection between John Poindexter and Antonin Scalia. Poindexter owns a company, all right, that was being sued in a discrimination lawsuit that was going to be a huge, if he lost, was going to be a huge payoff, okay?
Some
and Poindexter's company,
way to
it's a...
garner favoritism?
Well, here's what it was. It was a group called the MIC Group. And they were facing a discrimination lawsuit, all right? And for some reason, it was the appellate court had ruled in their favor, in the Mike Group's favor, and then the defendants got it approved to go to the Supreme Court, all right? Or to where the Supreme Court would at least hear it and decide whether or not they were going to allow the case or not, okay? And it looked like the Supreme Court was going to hear the case. And then for some reason, and we don't know if Antonin Scalia had anything to do with this or not. All right? Because I'm trying not to be negative towards the dead. But for some reason in 2000, you know, last fall, they decided to not hear this case. Now, more than likely, the reason they decided to hear the case was that the merits of it just didn't meet what they thought were the requirements, blah, 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 whatever it was. Now, you know, for all we know,
They have so many other important cases. Yeah,
they just decided not to hear.
So we don't know.
So that meant the Mike Group won the case, saving them millions of dollars. Okay. Now here is the other thing. The John Poindexter then invited Antonin Scalia, and by the way, we don't know if Scalia is the only one. We don't know. There might have been other people invited to this as well, and Scalia is the one who's getting the, you know, who's the one whose name's coming up because his name was made public because, well, there's an official record.
He shouldn't leave the party.
He died.
Well, I guess he did leave the party. He can't leave the state.
Yeah. He died at the party, so therefore the coroner had to make an official report of where the body was found. That's the only reason we know he was there, okay? So there could have been other people there. We don't know. They say that he was there with. They say that he was with friends from Washington D.C. We don't know the identity of his friend. The identity could have been. I mean, it could have been Clarence Thomas for all we know.
John Roberts
could have been. It could have been. I mean, who knows? Maybe it was
a number of people.
Maybe it was Kagan. Elena. Maybe Kagan was with him. Or Sotomayor. We don't. We don't know who was with him because they have a right to privacy. You know. And like I said, Scalia had a right to privacy if he would not have died. So rather than looking at this, rather than people going, hey, wait a minute. Don't you think it's bizarre that this guy who just had business in front of the Supreme Court and who ended up getting away with he saved a lot of money. Don't you think it's bizarre that he ended up inviting the Supreme Court justice to go to his place and do whatever he wants, and I'm assuming he got to do whatever he wants. I don't know. Whatever. I know one thing he got to do, and that's die. So,
yes.
Don't you think it's bizarre? And more importantly, don't you think it's bizarre that the United States allows this to happen?
Well, here's one thing, Ray. Let's say anything else that came up with this group. If he was out there and he had a personal relationship with the man that owns the ranch and the company, he can now recuse himself from any further cases brought.
It's really bizarre. Or, is this the first time he's ever been there? Maybe he's been there before. Did he go before he ruled on this thing? I mean, this is questionable. You would think we'd have some kind of law in place that would say, hey, a Supreme Court justice is not allowed to have relationship, blah, 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 blah. You think that would be some type of rule, right?
I guess you could say that, but still, I mean, let's say he went to some other ski resort and later on something happened and there was a discrimination case. I mean, we can't force them to lock themselves in their homes and never go anywhere.
Well, here's the thing, though. If someone else is paying for him to go, Poindexter paid for him to be there.
Now that
that's where I we get. I mean, it's not like Scalia wrote a check, okay?
Right.
And decided, you know what? I'm going to go on vacation. This place looks good. Oh, it just so happens to be owned by this guy who had business in front of us. No.
I mean,
this place is invitation only. It's invitation only. The only way where you're allowed to go there is if you get a personal invite. Now,
that's where, like the president. The president can't accept any gifts.
Yeah.
Or anything like that. So, yeah, if you're a Supreme Court justice, you probably should not be able to accept gifts, paid trips, unless the trip is paid for by the taxpayers.
And I'm telling you.
Some sort of official business.
That's a microcosm of what's wrong with our entire government.
Oh, yeah.
Is that they're allowed to do this stuff. I mean, it makes you wonder, how many trips are senators taking? How many trips are congressmen taking? How many trips are the president take? I mean, everybody that's supposed to be looking out for our best interest, and by our, I mean just, you know, citizens of the United States, including Poindexter, you know, including Scalia. But these people are supposed to be looking out for the best interest of all of us.
Didn't the hunting club take Dick Cheney and then he shot a friend?
I wonder if that was the same place. Wouldn't that be something? But it makes you wonder. And by the way, this Poindexter, looking in his background, he's one of the, I said earlier, but he's one of these guys. He does. It's not like he's this big conservative guy who just gives money to conservative cause. No, he's one of these guys that has so much money.
He has to give to both sides.
Yeah, he gave to Obama and McCain in 2008. Obama and Romney in 2012. He get, you know,
that's
like whoever runs for
bet.
President, he just gives it to both of them. Which is
yeah,
sort of what Goldman,
powerful.
Like Goldman Sachs is doing right now. You know,
yeah,
Sachs is giving money to Hillary and giving money to Ted Cruz.
Yeah, you have to.
And
I mean,
probably giving it
big.
To all the other candidates.
You don't have to, but they do. I shouldn't say they
yeah.
have to.
I mean, that's,
what they're doing is they're guaranteeing they come out on top.
That, in essence, is what the biggest problem is, one of the biggest problems in this country, is that the rich are
just
buying
that
one
for years.
So it makes you question. It makes you just question and makes you ask, did this guy, was there some quid pro quo? Was he paying off Scalia for the way that this thing happened to be ruled?
One could speculate that very easily, yes.
Yeah.
I would have to say that would have to be something that would have to come up in conversation if you were having that kind of conversation.
But here's the thing. We're not having that conversation because the conversation we're having is the one where people are saying, Obama killed Scalia. And by the way, the thing that got them is they said there was a pillow over his face. Okay. And people are freaked out by that. Let me just say, I sleep with a pillow over my face all the time. If I sleep on my back, okay, I have a pillow under my head, and then I have like a second pillow that I put like over my face. It
yeah,
doesn't
well,
cover my mouth, but it covers like my eyes and my, you know, top of my head and everything. And then when I roll over, I grab that pillow and I hug it.
That's, saying natural causes. He could have just laid down, had a headache, it'd been too bright, and he just stuck the pillow over his head. I mean, there's plenty of, you know, reasons why a pillow could be over somebody's head.
He could have been with two prostitutes. And the prostitute on top of him might have said, oh my God, it's Antonin Scalia, hold on, let me put this pillow here. And granted, I'm joking.
Look at this obese man.
We know, yes. My wife puts the pillow on my head. That's how it gets there. But I'm saying we don't know the reasons why. But for people to automatically jump to that conclusion,
one of the things
is,
that
it's, for me, it's crazy. To me,
that.
It's crazy. It's crazy that they jump to that conclusion.
But one of the things that helps lead to that is the fact that there was no official autopsy.
Let's look at how that went down. I explained that these ranches are, you know, miles in, okay?
Correct.
So they're in the county, but it's in its private thing. So someone, he's dead, and they call the sheriff. Now, it takes the sheriff a while to get there. Yeah, hour to get there. So they could have done God knows what to the body. They chose not to. They left him where he was in the bed, you know.
And let's say they didn't break
because he didn't wake up.
Laws.
Like everybody was getting up, and they didn't get up, so they went, "Hey, Antonin." They knocked on the door, and they opened the door, and he was dead. And they said the body was cold. Okay, so they called, and the county sheriff himself comes out there. All right, the sheriff along with some deputies, they ride all the way out there. They go in and they find him, and they say his body was cold. He had a peaceful look on his face. The room didn't look like anything was wrong with it. They said it sort of seemed like he died in his sleep. So they called the coroner, okay?
Who happened to be at a seminar or something.
Yeah, here's what happened. The coroner goes, hold on, let's make a call to his doctor. So they called his personal physician, all right?
A Navy doctor.
Yes, and the personal physician says, Justice Scalia suffered from chronic heart disease. He also had, type 2 diabetes. He was suffering. He had a long list. I mean, he had a long list of health concerns. And his doctor told them, and this was his personal physician said, yeah, we were afraid this could happen at any time. It was probably the travel, you know. The travel might have caused it, whatever it was.
And the hookers just threw it over the edge.
And so the coroner went to the sheriff and they said, look around, see if there's anything that seems strange. And they said, no, there was no There were no mark. There was nothing that led them to believe.
No signs of a struggle.
There was no signs of a struggle. It didn't look like he had any, like anyone injected him with anything. It didn't look like that, you know, like he was somehow fighting for his life. Looked like he went to sleep and died in his sleep.
And nobody else was dead or hurt. So.
And I wanted, and they haven't said, but isn't it like stroke? They just said natural causes, but the rumor I've heard is stroke or heart attack while he was sleeping. So I don't know what's true, but, you know. So that way the county, so the sheriff just said, yeah, no, he it's obvious he died in his sleep. So the coroner says, okay.
Which according to Texas law was fine to do.
Yes. So the coroner says, okay, well, we'll just put down natural causes. We don't want to embarrass him any further, blah, blah, blah. And that's the other thing that people are forgetting. Obviously, there's an element of this that they want to keep private. There's an embarrassing element of this. Which, let's face it.
And obviously the family,
let's face it,
is following along with this too because they're the ones that say,
yes,
yeah, we don't want to.
Valentine's weekend, he leaves his wife at home. He's at a ranch. God knows what's going on at that ranch. Come on. It's pretty
obvious. There's a jar of Viagra, like Tic Tac. Yeah. The front desk.
No, coroner. The only thing we see is, well, there seems to be a considerable amount of Viagra missing from this prescription bottle. They don't know what it is that caused this man's death. So they just go ahead and rule it the most logical explanation they can. But God forbid people on the internet take logic under consideration. Within 10 minutes of the man dying, Obama killed him. Obama killed him.
That's because they are so afraid of him getting to appoint another Supreme Court justice.
Yeah.
Which we don't know. He might not even try. He hasn't really said
yet.
Oh,
yeah, no, he's going to do it. He's going to do it. He's constitutionally, which is the next thing everybody starts talking about, the, you know, appointing someone. He's constitutionally mandated to appoint someone. Here's what people are forgetting in this whole debate about whether Obama should be allowed. You know, Ted Cruz immediately says, well, I think that this should be something for the next president to do. This should not be. President Obama should not.
If this would have been happened underneath of George W. Bush, the Republicans of the GOP would be like, quick, quick, quick.
It did happen with George Bush. But here's the other thing. Okay. The Constitution makes no, there's, you know, in the checks and balances of the Constitution, which is one of the reasons the Constitution's such a brilliant thing.
There's no time limit.
Well, there's checks and balances.
Right.
All right. And well, in the checks and balances, when they did the Constitution, they were afraid of, you know, they had just come out of monarchy. You know, so it was always going back to, we didn't want another monarch. So what they said is, and this is funny, when they were deciding this, you know, they said that the president must nominate a Supreme Court justice because their fear, the only fear they could come up with was, well, what if the president likes the makeup of the Supreme Court? What if he likes it? And he wants to, and he likes having eight justices because that way there's, or maybe at least seven, whatever the case may be. He could eliminate people, or if people died, that the president could just say, I'm not going to appoint someone else. And you'd have to wait at least 4 years before the next president would nominate someone. So they were afraid of that. So they put a clause in the Constitution that said the president must nominate a Supreme Court candidate. And they even put the words, and I don't have them in front of me, but he even put in, it has to be in a timely manner. Like, they made a point. They made a point of saying, this is what the president has to do. All right? They went out of their way to say the president must nominate someone, and he must do it quickly.
But that's all he's got to do is nominate.
Okay. That's what they said. They never, at no point did they take under consideration, at no point did they take under consideration that the Senate would refuse to confirm, because they when they were writing this stuff, they thought, okay, we're never going to have a Senate that's just so crazy and out of control that they think they can determine who's going to be put into the Supreme Court. So the Constitution mandates, it mandates that the president nominate someone as soon as possible. What it doesn't mandate is that the Supreme, is that the Senate has to confirm the person. It says, you know, now Senate has to try to attempt to do it. So
they
all of these,
vote, yeah.
So all of these people immediately start, but it does say that they have to at least attempt. You know what I mean?
There should be an up, like there should be an up or down vote.
Immediately, the Republicans, especially the Ted Cruz. What a horribly unlikable human being. Ted Cruz and people like that start with, well, the president shouldn't nominate anyone. He should wait for the next president to do it, which would be illegal. He's got to nominate someone. And the reason that Cruz wants him to wait is because he wants to use it as a campaign strategy. His campaign strategy is, hey, all you people out there that are thinking you're not going to vote, well, you better vote, because we're going to get to nominate a Supreme Court justice to do what we want.
Right, but that's not fair to the public.
No, it's not, because it's the United States people are owed.
Now the cases are going to stack up.
The United States people are owed a Supreme Court justice. Listen, the funny thing is, you know, in 1987, there was an opening on the Supreme Court. And it's funny because there were some Democrats that would have rather waited until the election, because they thought Dukakis might have had a shot to beat Bush. You know, of course, they hadn't determined that it was going to be Dukakis. It was still in the primary stages, or it wasn't even at the primary stages yet. But they, you know, people were just announcing they were going to run. And President Reagan ended up nominating Justice Kennedy, I believe, who ended up being passed by the Democrat Senate because they figured it was for the betterment of the country. Now, and so these people out there that are screaming that Obama shouldn't nominate someone, he should wait, their beloved Ronald Reagan, who they love more than anyone but Jesus.
He's close now.
And if he had long hair and a beard, he might have topped Jesus. But I'm saying that he nominated someone. So why would they think Obama? I mean, it's ludicrous for them to think that Obama is not going to nominate someone, or for them to mandate that Obama not nominate someone. It's crazy. And by the way, when you have a court made up of the people that we have on it, what are the ages of the Supreme Court justices?
A couple of them now are starting to get quite a bit younger.
Roberts is younger. Roberts is younger, right? Kagan's younger.
Sotomayor
is a little bit younger. But, I mean, you've got Ruth Bader Ginsburg is 82 years old.
Yeah, she was expected. Somebody was expecting that the next president was going to be replacing her.
Oh, absolutely. She's 82 years old, and I believe she's suffering from some type of cancer.
Yeah, and she'll probably, looking at Scalia, this will probably speed up her exit, I would imagine.
Here's the ages of the existing Supreme Court justices, and by the way, the people who appointed them, okay? Of the current Supreme Court justices, do you know which justice or which president nominated the most of them? This is kind of interesting.
I would say George W.
Yeah, absolutely correct, yes. George W. Or no, I'm sorry. Let's see. No, he's tied. Here's the, I take that back. Ronald Reagan nominated Scalia and Kennedy.
He still has the most.
No, I'm running down all of them for you. Reagan nominated Scalia and Kennedy. Of course, he doesn't have Scalia anymore. George H.W. Bush nominated Clarence Thomas. Okay?
Boy, was that a fight.
Yeah, it was. Bill Clinton nominated Ruth Bader Ginsburg and Stephen Breyer. George W. Bush nominated
John Roberts
and Alito, Samuel Alito.
Yes, and Samuel Alito.
And here's the interesting thing. Barack Obama has already put into the court Sonia Sotomayor and Elena Kagan.
So he would possibly...
Barack Obama will be... Because, listen, he's going to nominate someone, and they will have to pass. Even if they don't want to, tough shit, they're going to have to... I mean, tough crap, they're going to have to do it. There's no way around it. They could try to stall all they want. They will nominate someone. It might be that Srinivasan or someone like that, but he will get someone in there, which means Barack Obama will be the president that nominated the most amount of...
So he's going to be historic for multiple reasons.
Yes. Oh, boy, that'll make him very angry.
Oh, won't it?
But right now in the court... Until, of course, last weekend, there were five conservative judges and four liberal judges. The real reason they don't like this
hasn't been overturned.
The reason they don't like this, yeah. And by the way, even with that, Roe v. Wade has not been overturned. You're right. But now you're going to have five liberal judges. Or will you? Because one thing with these judges, you never know. Everyone assumes.
John Roberts has voted in some moderate to me.
The whole thing is how you interpret the Constitution of the United States of America. It has to be with how you interpret the Constitution. And that's the question. Now, Obama's actually eligible himself. Obama's a constitutional lawyer. I guess we're all eligible, but Obama could be a Supreme Court justice one day. I doubt he will, but he could be.
But
he is a constitutional lawyer. He understands it.
Why would you want to do that for life, you know?
No, he would. No, there's no way. I think he's just going to sit on the... I think Obama's going to sit on boards of companies.
So he'll be on the talk circuit for a while at universities.
Well, he'll do that. Yeah, he'll do talks. He'll write books. He'll do like a Jimmy Carter or a Bill Clinton thing where he has some kind of, you know, help the world organization.
Yeah, he might. You might even see him out there golfing with George H.
Oh, absolutely.
You never know.
Chill out. But I'll tell you what else. I think if he wanted to, the United Nations would gladly make him the next person to charge. Could you imagine? Oh, my God. Could you imagine the conspiracy theorist if somehow President Obama...
It's the New World Order.
Yeah, it's the New World Order is taking over us? Oh, my God. The liberal agenda is taking over the world.
You would see survival food and bunkers going crazy.
Glenn Beck would be, he would never show his face in sunlight again. He'd be living in the bunker full time. But to get back to my original point, Ruth Bader Ginsburg is 82 years old, okay? Anthony Kennedy is 79 years old. Clarence Thomas is 67 years old. Stephen Breyer is 77 years old. Now, these are people who are getting up there in years. Now, everybody else relatively young. John Roberts only 61. Alito only 65. Sotomayor 61. And Elena Kagan's only 55. Elena Kagan will be there another 25 years.
Oh, yeah.
Of course, she is a little chubby, so...
But the Supreme Court justices seems like once you become a Supreme Court justice, I don't know what they give you, but you seem to live a long time.
You do live a long time. Well, come on. How stressful is it? You work what? You work a month a year? The rest of the time you're hanging out at Hooker Ranch? Come on.
Well, that can be dangerous.
You know, obviously.
You get a Lamar Odom cocktail, and next thing you know.
No, it is amazing because they work a limited amount of months. They only work for so many months. And they do you know how much Supreme Court justices make? Over $250,000 a year.
Oh, yeah.
That's their salary. They do pretty well. I mean, they don't make
no health insurance.
They don't make Hooker Ranch money.
You don't pay for much of anything.
No.
As a Supreme Court.
No, you don't have to pay for insurance. You know
that gig's for life. You go to Bethesda, you get the best
everything,
medical care.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah. You got bodyguards.
It just is crazy to me that this happens. Okay, and it's big news when someone like Anthony Scalia dies, and immediately within minutes, the first thing they're doing is coming up with conspiracy theories.
For a lot of people, he was the conservative face on the Supreme Court.
So why would anyone kill him? It just makes no sense.
No, it's crazy to think that there's any sort of somebody in the government off Anton Scalia. No.
It makes zero sense to have killed him. It really does. I don't know why. I just don't know why anyone would do that.
Because if you're the liberal side, you still don't have a majority at this point. So
yeah,
it seems like the court's pretty even. So I mean, you know, it's never been far one way or the other in my lifetime that I can remember. So I don't see where the panic's coming from that caused people to think that there's any kind of conspiracy.
And let's face it, you've always got people who are supposed to be one way but lean the other. Underneath this so-called conservative court, where we're supposed to have five conservative justices, we've seen Obamacare, gay marriage. Roe v. Wade upheld? Yes, more than once. None of those.
The Second Amendment is affirmed.
Yeah, not well. The Second Amendment is, but of anything else, none of those are conservative. You would think that those would all be in danger. Now we also saw Citizens United, which we could all, and we've seen the rights of wealthy people
triumph
over the rights of everybody else. That has been
corporations are considered people.
Yeah, that's the kind of thing that has been scary. But when it comes to other stuff, look at that. You've got same-sex marriage is now allowed. Who would have thought a conservative would have allowed that? But they did. So everybody, all these conservatives are freaking out saying, we need to get a conservative in there. Listen, even when you put one in, doesn't necessarily mean you're going to get everything you want. So why not just let President Obama nominate someone and give him a vote? And by the way, come up, if you don't want him, come up with a reason other than he was nominated by the black guy, so I don't want him.
Amen.
You know, come up with another, if you don't want him, come up with another reason.
Yeah, he's behind on his taxes or
other than, well, Obama nominated, so he can't, so it's got to be something wrong with him. Because it does seem to be their, you know.
If they're qualified and they're eligible, give them an up or down.
Give them a vote.
That's all you have to do.
Yeah. All right, I'm moving on to other things. Bruce Rauner yesterday did a State of the State, Tommy. And he gave this. He gave this sort of, in my opinion,
benevolent dictator.
Yeah, he's such a losing strategy. You know, he digs in more with this wannabe Scott Walker strategy. You know,
and he's blatant about saying, "Give me this, or else."
He keeps wanting to push this turnaround agenda, which everyone says is bad
for the middle class.
For the middle class. But he keeps pushing it. And then, of course, he goes and says give him he wants this clean bill for appropriation for school, you know, for school funding, education funding, but he refuses to hear this. By the way, that very good bill that Andy Menard came up with, he refuses to hear the bill that takes any money from the districts that don't need it. And by the way, that's what it is. There are districts that don't need it.
Here's the thing that bothers me, Ray. By the Constitution of Illinois, he is also supposed to submit a balanced budget himself.
Yeah, and he doesn't.
And he doesn't.
No.
And he's even saying, you know, he's hammering that he wants a balanced budget. Well, the $36 million you're talking about approving if you get your turnaround agenda isn't what Illinois is making. It's not balanced.
No.
It's out by like $4 billion.
And he always comes up with crafty ways. He always comes up with crafty ways to imply that the deadbeat poor and the deadbeat blacks are getting too much money. You ever get that? You know what I mean? Like without coming out and saying it. You know,
we have to have welfare and tort reform. It's like,
yeah,
the people that you're focusing.
Oh yeah, and tort reform and workers' compensation. Somehow, I'm trying to figure out how that's hurting. How is that hurting? I'm not sure how it's hurting us. You know, somehow he's somehow claiming that businesses won't come to Illinois because we're somehow pro-worker. God forbid we be a pro-worker state.
Yeah, you would think, you know, that if you got happy employees that are well-protected, that they're going to be productive.
And he says he refuses to accept any kind of tax increase unless they give him the turnaround agenda. Here's the bottom line. The man wants to hurt the union.
He wants, and I know that this
was very unpopular when I would say this on my AM show. And there were people that didn't like me saying this on my AM show, but I'm on the internet now. So I will say once again, all he cares about is hurting the union. And the main reason he wants to hurt the union is because getting rid of public unions is the next step to getting rid of private unions. Public unions tend to be the number one fundraiser for Democratic candidates. And number three, he likes the power being in the hands of the rich and powerful. He doesn't like the power, the collective power that the unions have. You notice guys like Rauner like to make everyone individuals. And rather than having a large group of a bunch of people making $50,000, $60,000 a year, he'd rather have them all be individuals that make $50,000, $60,000 a year, because when they're grouped together, they're worth millions of dollars, which somehow puts them on par with people like him. And he'd rather people be judged individually, so therefore he and people like him, you know, keep having more power than everyone else.
He shows his colors every time the House votes that he has to go into arbitration. He has threatened to veto it. He's already vetoed it once.
He'll keep vetoing it again.
I
mean, why not go to binding arbitration? What is he so afraid of in arbitration?
Because he knows he'll lose.
Other than the fact that they'll be fair. And he keeps saying, he goes, I'm offering them, I'm preparing and fixing to be offering, because for some reason he doesn't pronounce his G's. I'm offering them a fair contract. Okay, if it's so fair, if what you're offering is fair, why won't you go into binding arbitration? Why won't you go into arbitration? If what you're offering is fair, why don't you risk it and let the arbitrator decide how fair it is? Why are you so afraid that the arbitrator's immediately going to find with the union unless you realize that what you're offering really isn't all that fair.
Right. And here's another thing. You know, he's always bragging about being just a common guy, Carhartt wearing Harley rider. Does he realize his Harley Davidson is built by union men?
Oh, yeah.
And women.
Well, he's just like the rest of us.
even in his charitable giving, he loves to give to the charter schools, not because he loves charter schools, because he hates the teachers union. That's his little dig at the teachers union.
Yeah. Absolutely.
The man reminds me of one of them people that says these, that I used to hear all the time when I was a kid, say, do as I say, not as I do.
And let's face it, he's following the same playbook that Scott Walker followed, that Rick Snyder followed. And he's being, and you know what? Those things are paid for by the same people. I mean, his supporters, you know, his biggest campaign contributors don't even live in Illinois.
No.
They're all part of that same group that has an agenda. Money for the Illinois Policy Institute doesn't even come from Illinois.
No, the Illinois Policy Institute sits there and says how his turnaround agenda is going to be a great thing.
Yeah.
But they never go into detail of saying what parts of this is going to really affect the economy that's going to turn things around for Illinois. If it's going to turn it around for the budget and the government, it still has to be work for the people because we're the ones that pay the taxes. You take away the people in Springfield who make – Springfield is like – you look at Decatur, you look at Peoria – well, maybe not Peoria, but Pekin. You know, other towns our size that are struggling in the Midwest. We have it pretty good. If our state workers didn't make the money they made, do you think Springfield would look like it looks today?
Absolutely not, no.
We wouldn't be getting new restaurants, new stores.
You know what? You want to know what tastes the worst to me? This is what leaves a sour taste in my mouth right here. They constantly do this thing where they try to pit our neighbors against us. Well, look at those lazy state workers. They're lazy. They don't do anything. They get a pension. You don't get a pension. You're not getting a pension. You're not getting those holidays. You're not making that kind of money. Don't they make you jealous? Don't you think you should be with us and be against them? It's like, hell no, because you're making millions of dollars. If I want to be jealous of somebody, I'll be jealous of you. Stop trying to fill my mind and make me hate my neighbors with your lies.
They have juicy pensions, Ray. Juicy. Generous benefits, Ray. Generous. Does the public sector get that? Bullcrap. There's a lot of jobs. If you go out there, you get an education, you work hard. Yes. You can get good benefits.
But here's the thing. They've gone out of their way to make education harder to get. They've gone out of the way to make good jobs harder to get. What we have in this country, and this is going to be very leftist, and boy, the people that thought I was left when I was on the radio, you're going to hate this. But the people who have the good jobs, the people who own the good companies, the people who have the money, their number one goal, make no mistake about it, their number one goal is to make sure that their family, that their kind of people keeps it coming, that they're the ones that continue to get it. Why are they not against? I mean, you would think you would want every single person to be able to get the education that you had. No, they don't want that. They just want their kids to get it. They want to make it expensive so that they know they can afford it. They don't want someone to be able to get what they got. They want to just have their family, their legacy be to hand it down one right after the other. And that's what's sad. What they try to do is make it harder for everyone else to get what they have. And it used to be the American dream used to live. It used to be around where if you did work hard and you did.
You stuck with a company.
Yeah.
And you had loyalty.
And you had loyalty. Well, I had loyalty. And you want to know what it did to me? It got me kicked in the ass. Every time I've ever had loyalty, I could kick my ass right out of there. And no loyalty. That's what's happening in this country. It used to be if you worked hard, if you showed up on time, if you stayed late, if you if you worked hard in school, you got a good education, you did all of these things, then you had a chance to succeed. Now, the hardest people that I know people that work 3 part-time jobs. These people can't work any harder. They're working as hard as they possibly can. They still don't have enough money to get benefits for their family. They still don't have enough money to put food on the table, and they still have to live in the hood, even though they're working that hard.
Is, if you lower taxes and if you reduce the amount that you have to contribute to pensions and welfare, that people are going to hire more people. No, they're going to pocket more money.
Yes, which I think that's the most of all of the rights BS.
Trickle down economics does not work.
Trickle down economics is BS because what they do is they pocket it. To somehow say we need tort reform and workers' compensation reform in this country or in this state, and that's going to bring and that's going to make the wealthy people want to start more businesses and hire more people. That is such BS.
The
only thing that drives that decision is by having market conditions where the demand is great and it requires them to hire more people. They're not going to do it. They're not going to say, oh, look, my tax return. I didn't have to pay so much taxes this year. I think I'm going to use the money that I would have paid in taxes and just hire people for no reason.
The simplest way to prove that is look at the stores. During the holidays, they hire more seasonal workers.
Yes.
They lay them off the rest of the year. Why? Because people
the demand
are
is there.
The holidays.
It's such bullcrap. So their answer is to take money out of the hands of people who spend it.
They're cutting
Which,
their own
Which, by the
throat,
way, and,
the
and you know, you know, you and I have had this discussion before. I think the biggest mistake we made in this country was 2008 when they decided to do the TARP. Remember? President Bush did it, and then Obama did it as well. They both said, all we need to do is we need to give $1 trillion to the banks. We need to give $1 trillion to the banks so they can bail themselves out. What they should have done is they should have put money in the hands of every single American. Because you want to know what Americans do with money when they get it? They spend it.
We spend it.
Spending money would have driven the economy. It would have raised demand. It would have naturally made companies hire more people. And then when they hired more people, we'd create more taxpayers. It's so strange to me.
And on this, I don't blame just the Republicans.
No, this is the Democrats as well. It's the Democrats as well. Listen, Obama's not a Republican. He gave him $1 trillion too.
Yeah, and
$750 billion or whatever it was. You know,
Clinton came up with NAFTA. I knew that was a bad idea. Yeah. When you start taking jobs and allowing them to
go overseas. NAFTA was a Reagan.
Those jobs aren't coming back.
NAFTA was a Reagan idea that George Herbert Walker Bush perfected. Unfortunately, it wasn't perfection.
And it took Clinton to get it through.
And he put it through. And it needed a hell of a lot more fixes before he rushed it. That was a bill that should have taken 20 years to create. They took 7 years and.
That right there hurt Galesburg, Illinois.
Yeah, well, it hurt a lot of cities, but
yeah, it hurt a lot of.
But if you look at the overall scope of things, okay. If you look at overall, the way that this country gets hurt by this false idea of trickle down economics that don't exist, if you go back in history, history will show you that the way we got out of the biggest depression we've ever had is that. FDR basically
put
said
people to work,
and it wasn't just him. It was him and then Truman, and they basically said, and even Eisenhower, they said, screw it. Whatever it takes, let's just hire people. And they trusted the private sector to hire people, and they never hired them. They wouldn't hire them. So what did they do? They said, screw it. Let's just hire them. Let's hire them ourselves. Or what are we going to have them do? They're like, well, we'll have them build roads. Let's have them build roads. Let's have them build bridges. Let's have them build these things. So it was this amazing thing that they started doing. They hired all these people, right?
And this wasn't shoddy work. This is stuff that stands today.
Yeah, they trained people. They hired them. They trained them. They put them to work. But most importantly, they were getting a paycheck every 2 weeks. And with that paycheck, they spent it. Now, people are saying, oh, my God, well, look at the debt, blah, blah. We went into debt as a country, and we devalued our dollar, and we created inflation, blah, blah, blah. Yeah, but here's the deal. We created more taxpayers. And then this amazing thing happened. This amazing thing happened. People who were people started getting paid money, and they started spending it, which made the private sector need to hire more people. So when the unemployment level got lower to the point to where they had hired everybody else who didn't have a job from, you know, the millions that the government had hired, then they started actually taking those people off the government rolls and having them go. And then you had private industry say, hey, you know what? Instead of you guys building those roads, because it was getting to the point where government jobs were competing with private sector jobs, they said, hey, I'll build those roads. Instead of giving money to those employees, why not give money to my company? I'll hire a bunch of people, blah, blah, blah. That's technically, I mean, if you really want to look at it, that's how they fixed the country. That, and they gave a lot of soldiers a paycheck who went to fight World War II. But from after World War II on up to the 70s, it was that type of infrastructure and that type of philosophy that got our country really rolling. So this time around, all right, this time around, we have the recession, right?
Yes.
And what is the very first thing that the Republicans do? What is the first thing that they demand from President Obama when history shows what he needed to do was hire, was have the government hire more people? Instead, he was a, you know, they gave money to the banks, and they demanded that he cut public workers. He cut public workers to a record. He had to cut a record amount of public workers. Do you know how many people that worked for the United States government were fired or retired and didn't have their jobs replaced since 2008? It's since 2009. It's astronomical. It really is. It's
I agree, totally.
Insane.
And but unfortunately, this pitting us against our neighbors is working in this modern era of politics.
This whole sequestration that they made him go through, their austerity plan of cutting this and cutting that and cutting this, it's still not working. And it's driving up our deficit more and more every single. One thing you say about when the government spends money on people, they do get part of it back. They get part of it back in payroll, in taxes. If the government hires someone, that person has to pay taxes. That was very loud. That person has to pay taxes. And when they pay taxes, the money goes back to the government. Now, when the government gives money to corporations, we don't. That's not all. Not all that money is going to be paid back in. Or we're not going to get the same amount paid back in income tax. So listen, I could go forever on this stuff, but my God, we've only tried it this way once. Okay, we've only tried it this way once, and it worked. And now there. You can't try it again because the people, and we go back to the point we were making earlier, the people who have the money want to keep making the money. So they're making sure that officials get elected
that allow them to keep their money.
They want to make sure that that's what those officials do. And they also demand this austerity and this sequestration and all these spending things. It makes it harder for the government to succeed. And the bad part is that the party that was supposed to be the one opposed to this kind of stuff, they're going along with it.
They're complicit.
No matter what you say, I think President Obama is going to go down in history favorably. I really do. I think he's going to go down with a very favorable presidency. But the reason he won't be the greatest of all time is because they snowed him into giving all that money to the banks. And the other thing is, they gave all that. And by the way, he did follow history. He wanted to create an infrastructure plan. All right, his infrastructure plan was aimed to redo bridges and redo, you know what I mean, and do all that stuff. But this time, instead of hiring the people themselves, the money went to giant companies that own construction firms that didn't hire anybody.
Yeah, if you look at it, Katrina, they hired all these big construction firms that did not use prevailing wage workers.
Yeah.
And look at the money that was just wasted.
Because the state that they did it, they were able to, I mean, let's face it, they were able to, they put in place, you know, the things that Bruce Rauner loves, these right to, you know, these right to work zones and blah, blah, blah. So now you've got these companies. I'll give you in the state of Illinois. I'll give you an example of the state of Illinois. And that is right now the state of Illinois can't pay its bills. But we still need to have roads done. We need to have bridges built. We need to have these things done. Now, in the past, you and I are working hard. We say we know how to build a road, okay? We know how to do a road, you and I. Right. And we say to ourselves, hey, you know what? If we go out and get some heavy machinery, we can build a road. So therefore, what we're going to do is we're going to bid on these contracts. Now, you and I say to ourselves, rather than pay ourselves a boatload of money, what we need to do is we need to bid these jobs low. We'll put in the most favorable bid. We'll get the job. And then we'll take the money that the state gives us and we'll buy more equipment. Now, first we'll get the loan. Then we'll pay back the loan. We'll buy more equipment and we'll get another one. And then eventually we'll get a big job and then we'll hire like 10 guys. And then we'll, you know, when we break even with that, we'll get another job, another one, and we'll hire like 30 more guys, and then we'll just keep working. That's how it used to work, okay? Well, now in the state of Illinois, okay? In the state of Illinois, if they need a road job, if they need something fixed, they'll take a bid. But when you make a bid for any business in the state of Illinois, what you have to do is you have to be okay with not getting paid for at least a couple years. So, Ray and Tommy know how to build a road. Can we get ourselves a loan for equipment and not pay back anything for 2 years? Hell no. So what you've got is you've got these billionaires or these multimillionaires who own a construction company, right?
Out of state.
Yeah, out of state. Oh, yeah. And they'll get the job. And they'll have their guys that they already employ, because they only employ so many guys. Now, the plan is for the state, they say, oh, well, they'll hire local people to do it. But they don't hire local people to do it. They bring in their guys.
And they put them up in cheap hotels.
They put them up in cheap hotels. And then they float their guys the money because they have enough money in their own personal, you know, accounts to where they don't have to get paid for 2 years. And then when the job's done, they leave or they go do the other job. So they'll win, and here's the other thing. They'll win 6 or 7 bids at a time. Now, in the past, you get 6 or 7 bids at a time. You have to hire more people. You have to hire all of these people so that you can take care of all the jobs at once, right? You have to hire all of them. But now what they do is they do one job, and then they start another one. And then when that one's done, then they start another one, or else they do little bits and pieces of all of them, but they don't hire one single extra person. And then finally, when they're done, the guys go back to where they're from. Nobody gets new jobs. No, there's no new hires. There's no new money being spent. The people who do the job, they send the money back home to wherever they live. This is what's happening in Illinois.
And if they're paying the prevailing wage, their workers don't get the prevailing wage when all's said and done.
Yeah.
they'll end up paying it back to the company later on that year.
It really is crazy. But the wealthy, the guys who have the money to, you know, the guys who have the credit, or the people that have the money in the banks that can afford it, well, that's what they will end up. That's who will end up making all the money. They'll get all of the jobs. And in the past, it used to be small businesses turning into middle-sized businesses, eventually turning into large businesses.
There used to be so many, just in Springfield alone, family-owned construction companies.
Yeah, now forget it. It's only the biggest ones.
Just to survive, they've all had to either consolidate into a group of local people, or they've had to sell out to somebody from out of town because they just can't do it anymore. The jobs and the way it's structured here in Illinois just is not favorable for these companies because of the government, not because of anything the workers have done.
I'm telling you, we live in, as I said earlier, we live in interesting times. We live in interesting times.
And the two-party system, Ray, just isn't helping.
All right, article, yeah, absolutely. Article on Slate today. All right, now we'll wrap up. We don't have a lot of time. Tommy, there's so many things I want to get to. We're running out of time. I can't get to any of them. An article in Slate today. I don't have a lot of time with it because I still want to get into Judith Johnson. But and we're not even going to have time for Chatham and the song Glory, which is a whole crazy thing. I don't know if you heard of that. But Slate is running an article that I thought was so good, and I just wanted to pass it along and let people. Maybe, you know what? I take that back. Maybe it was Mother Jones. But let me reference this so you guys can find it on your own. They did a bipartisan group did a study on the tax of the tax plans of all the candidates. Okay? And of all of the candidates running for president, there is actually one president whose tax plan gives the biggest breaks to the wealthy and actually raises taxes on the lowest wage-earning Americans. Would you like to guess
what, what candidate could that possibly be?
There's a candidate whose tax plan actually gives the biggest tax increase to the wealthiest Americans. And there's only one guy. All the other tax plans lowers the tax. This is everybody, even the tax loving Democrats. All their plans lower taxes for the smallest wage earning Americans.
You would think it'd be Donald Trump, but
it's not Donald Trump. No, there's one guy whose plan actually raises their tax rate.
Ted Cruz.
Absolutely Ted Cruz, yes. 100%. It is Ted Cruz. It is 100% Ted Cruz. So if you get a chance.
My God, he's a principled conservative, Ray.
If you get a chance, you've got to see this article, and maybe I'll put that up on the Facebook page or something so you can see it. And last but not least, we don't have time to get the Chatham thing, but let me get to Judith Johnson, who wins the Ray Lytle Show. Are you kidding me? Award of the week. Judith Johnson took time out at the school board meeting the other day to claim
that Zebras are racist?
The referee in the Lanphier versus Jacksonville basketball game was racist. And that's why he made the bad decision, the bad call he made that cost Lanphier the game.
Now, let me get this right. This was also referees from the Peoria area. It wasn't like local referees that had any preference for either one of these two teams.
No, yeah, it's just they were just referees. Yeah, just IHSA basketball referees that were in, they weren't from Jacksonville, but Lamphere lost the game, and she claimed
there were some technical fouls that were questionable.
Yes. And she, in the school board meeting, she claimed that there was racism that was responsible for them losing the game. She said that race was a factor in their decision.
Right, that the makeup should reflect the players as well. So,
and by the way, and Judith Johnson said a lot of crazy things. And by the way, I don't dislike Judith. I actually like Judith Johnson. But this is, of all the crazy things she said, it's the craziest damn thing she's ever said. Of all the things she says, this is the craziest.
I think last year she also kind of made a reference about the same thing during a Taylorville contest.
I'm not familiar, but probably.
But I'm all for diversity, but when you have, it's not easy to be a referee number one.
Right.
You're taking a lot of time out of your own, from your families and, whatever, to go make sure that these kids can play competitive ball. And to sit there and call them a racist just because there were some bad calls made in the basketball game.
Here's what you do. You can call them bad refs because there is such a thing. I put up with bad umpires and bad referees my whole life. I played sports my whole life. I have played, and there's nothing more frustrating than when you're in a game against a bad referee is in charge of it. And trust me, I've played basketball before where someone calls something and you make the mistake of rolling your eyes or doing something that offends a referee.
Oh,
and
yeah.
You
then
know
you got an attitude,
they're
looking, got one with you.
Has nothing to do with the race. Had nothing to do with the color of my skin. It just doesn't. You could say they're bad refs. You could say maybe there was some body language of the Lamphere kids that made them a little bit quicker to whistle. Maybe they got hyped up in the whole Jacksonville's the underdog. This is exciting. It could have been that. But to say that it's race, come on. Especially in a sport like basketball.
And it could have even been like a regional thing where they just are more focused on a certain area that we don't let our players in our area, play rough and get out of control. So we call technicals a little bit quicker.
The whole allegation of racism is, are you kidding me? I mean, that's why it's so ridiculous. You could say the ref sucked. You could say the IHSA should be ashamed of themselves and put these, but to say it was race, that's crazy. That's insane. That it's just craziness to say the IHSA has racist referees. I mean, how many of this last state champion? The state champions are always black kids. When's the last time? When's the last time you saw some all white school beating an all black school? It just doesn't work that way.
It doesn't happen.
It doesn't work that way.
And it's really not fair to the kids.
Yeah, and it makes the Lamphere players look like crybabies.
We have already to make that kind of an excuse.
And by the way, it's one freaking game. It's one game. Lamphere is having a great season. They'll go all the way to at least, they'll go to the sectionals, super sectionals. Hell, they might even go to state.
I have no doubt. Yeah,
they might even go to state.
Solid team.
You don't need to complain over one game like this. It's not even the playoffs.
No, it wasn't like they got knocked out of
it. It was a regular season conference game. And rather than just let it be a nice moment for Jacksonville, oh, they finally beat us, blah, blah, blah. Instead, it turns into a contentious debate about race. And last but not least, speaking about race, I've got 40 seconds. There are some parents in Chatham, a handful of parents. In fact, I've heard it's three parents that had a problem with the Chatham Glenwood Choir singing the song Glory at an upcoming...
Because of the lyrics?
Yeah, because they say that Glory... Glory is an anti-police officer song. By the way, I am so sick of this anti-police crying stuff. Our default position in this country is that we love the police. That's our we respect our police, we love our police, we're thankful for our police. That's our default position. Stop getting angry at people for not screaming their default position. It should go without saying that that's how we feel. You know, I'm sick of people on Facebook sending me, Ray, how come you haven't put on Facebook that you support our police officers? Well, why the hell should I have to put that? Isn't it obvious that I support our police officers? That's like me saying, hey, I'm male. I don't have to declare that I support police officers because in the United States of America, that's our default position.
Yes, they do a wonderful, most of the time.
Yes.
They do a thankless job, but I don't necessarily have to join in every post on Facebook that is pro something.
Why are you getting mad because people complained about an unarmed kid getting shot in Ferguson? They're like, why are you even talking about it? Because it happened. And that's different from the default position. That's how it works in this country. News is supposed to be something out of the ordinary. It is ordinary for police officers to shoot criminals when they shoot people who aren't criminals. It's normal for police officers to shoot people who are armed. When police officers shoot people who are unarmed or shoot people who are innocent, I'm sorry, that is news. That is the definition of news. When something happens that is the usual, we don't really... it's just expected. That's how it's supposed to work.
It goes back to the conditions of politics right now. When people have just had enough of being on the lower end of the scale, eventually something's going to break. That just happened to be the breaking point in Ferguson.
There's a great bit by Chris Rock where he talks about...
Don't jack with the police.
Well, no, even better than that. Chris Rock does a bit where he says, he goes, what is with these guys walking around going, I take care of my kids. I take care of my kids. Pat me on the back. I take care of my kids. And Chris Rock says, I'm not going to pat you in the back. You're supposed to take care of your kids. That's what you're supposed to do. I don't congratulate you for doing what you're supposed to do. It's like these kids that go, oh man, you should be proud of me. I went to school. No, I'm not proud of you for going to school. You're supposed to go to school. Why would I just be proud of you for doing that? That's what you're supposed to do.
I paid for my bill. You're supposed to
do
that.
I paid my electric bill. Well, you're supposed to pay your electric bill. What do you want? What do you want a pat on the back for doing what you're supposed to do? Same thing goes for police. Stop yelling at me. Stop saying, hey, man, where's my pat on the back? Where's my pat on the back? I respected a police officer. Well, you're supposed to respect him. What do you need a pat on the back for? Oh, what's wrong with you, Ray? How come you don't have a blue stripe on the back of your car? What the hell do I need a blue stripe on the back of my car for? Well, you got to let people know. You got to let people know that you support the police. I do support the police. I'm supposed to support the police. Of course I support them. What do I got to be like you and expect a pat on the back for doing what I'm supposed to do?
If you did that to your car that they do to Facebook, you wouldn't be able to see out your windshield.
It's insane. So anyway, they go to sing the song Glory. Now, during the Ferguson riots, people played that song, and there was a line in the song where they rapped, all right? They rapped during the song, and they said that they actually mentioned Ferguson. You know, when they blah, 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 our brothers in Ferguson.
We marched with our hands in the air.
Yeah, we marched with our hands in the air for our brothers in Ferguson, whatever it is. By the way, the Chatham Choir isn't even doing that song. They're just, or isn't even doing the rap part. They're just singing the song, When the Glory Comes, Glory, you know, however the song goes. The Academy Award winning song. And by the way, beautiful song. But these parents had a problem because that's an anti-police song. And the school's like, well, we're going to have to meet with the police. What do you need the police's permission? Chatham police officers are friends of mine. I fully support Chatham police officers. One of my best friends in this world works for the police department. But I don't think that the police department should have any say over what the hell gets played at a choir concert. And to be honest, if these people don't want that, if you don't want to hear that song, then don't go to the concert. And the most disgusting thing is, I live in Chatham. Chatham's a beautiful town. It's a wonderful place to live. It's a wonderful place to raise a family. And it's a good school district. And it is embarrassing to me. Embarrassing.
To have this be that big of an issue.
That there are jackasses out there that are making this an issue. It is embarrassing. So please, people, don't think that represents all of Chatham, because it certainly does not. All right, Tommy. Uh-oh, I hear the music.
I hear it, too.
That means it must be ending. Thank you for listening to our test show.
I had a great conversation, Ray.
Yeah, it was just fun talking to my buddy Tommy. We certainly weren't doing a real show. It's a Ray Lytle show. He's Tommy. I'm Ray. Thank you for listening. So long, everybody.
Bye-bye.